Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined my good friend and fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. I am glad to be back. Maybe the craziest weekend of the year we've had in college football. Like from noon till like midnight, it was an awesome day for college football.
You couldn't look away. Everything from start to finish. We'll get into one game that it was unfortunate that it was really ruined due to injury. I think it changed the entire makeup of the game, but we'll get to that in due course. But man, yeah, across the board, with the family was in town for Tennessee, South Carolina. I got to see the Vol squirrel in action this weekend.
What that
was
is good. The Vol squirrel?
So it's this, he's hugely popular. He's this guy who has this pet squirrel, and he comes to the games. He's decked out in all Tennessee stuff, but it's a pet squirrel. He had on full Tennessee helmets gear. Like, and people were letting him, like, he was letting people put it on his shoulder. He was in multiple tailgates. Saw the mayor of Cleveland, or mayor of Cleveland, the mayor of Knoxville, Glenn Jacobs. Don't know if you know Glenn Jacobs, aka Kane, was at this game.
Who doesn't know Glenn Jacobs?
Yeah. So he's a gigantic man in person. Just walk in beside him. He's a gigantic man. And then my father.
Well, before you move on, that squirrel thing, that sounds like the worst thing I've ever heard in life. Honestly, like, have you ever heard of the slow pour? In Lawrenceville?
Yes.
Yeah, we went there one time, and this guy had a pet ferret and, like, came to there by himself. I don't know how you feel about ferrets. Just rodents in general, I just feel like she's not a fan of. And this guy had a ferret on a leash. Mm-hmm. Like, he wanted people to ask him about the ferret, you know? And Tori made a generalization about white people that day. And I was like, I'm white and I did not like that ferret, but it was crazy how many people were just like, oh my God, can I pet your ferret? And I was just like, what world are we living in where people want to touch this thing? Like, I was like, we went and sat somewhere else so we could be as far away from this ferret as possible. So like a squirrel being on my shoulder or something sounds like the worst thing I've ever heard. Like I respect this guy's hustle and, you know, his dedication, but that sounds awful.
Well, what's funny is that you bring that up because one of the tailgates we were at before the game, the Sports Renaissance woman knew the couple who did the tailgates. We were over there, and really, really nice, really sweet people. But the squirrel man made his way into this particular tailgate too, and the woman saw it and was just like disgusted, like Tori, like just disgusted and like wanted him out, and went to get her husband to like inform him of him, because like I understand it from a food perspective where you like you have all this food and drinks and you're just like, I don't want this squirrel just like hopping around and just potentially contaminating the food and everything. And The husband has the exact opposite reaction that she's. He's like, "Oh, cool, wow!" And he goes over and like takes a picture of it up close, and it was just hilarious. Like that was the exact opposite reaction as to what she was looking for. So yeah, there's two different kinds of people in this world: the people that see it and are like, "Let me get a picture with that. Let me hold that," and then there are the people who are just completely repulsed. There's no middle ground, I don't think.
I think that's 100% accurate.
But no, great turnout. The black uniforms were a hit. Seats were great. The game was a blast. Josh Heupel continues. Did you see that tweet where it's like the SEC power rankings, where it's like 1 Georgia, 2 Alabama, 3 Tennessee in the first quarter?
No, I did not see that.
We're outscoring people in the first quarter, I think like 114-13 or something like that. Like we're just ending
up some points.
I mean, we're just
they look like a completely different team with Hendon Hooker.
I mean, we're just ending games in the first quarter. It was 28-0 at the end of the first, I think, yesterday. But no, it's just he goes for the jugular really quickly, and Shane Beamer got a lot of glimpses of him on the sideline. He is not having a good time. Like he was not having fun, from what I could tell.
Well, that's why I don't get why everyone is just like so quick to jump. Like, well, they clearly got the right guy. You know, they got the right guy running the driving the ship. So, you know, they'll be fine. It might take a while, and I'm just kind of like, what has Shane Beamer done to prove it anything that he's the right guy other than just be likable? Like, I'm not blaming him for South Carolina right now because it's such a tough gig, but I think the jury is definitely very much still out. I feel like I give him a couple, maybe 3, maybe 4 years, but we'll see.
Yeah, it was just the people who just accepted, like, he would be better than Muschamp. It's like, Muschamp, I think people are just realizing that job is extremely difficult, and Steve Spurrier may have made it seem less difficult than it actually was.
Without a doubt. It's like Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier. Mm-hmm. You got 2 Hall of Fame coaches. It's like,
yeah.
It kind of in the same scenario, too, like, guys that already had their prime coming at like one last dance. Like I can still coach ball. All right. I can get out there. So it's like, is that the next scenario? You know, can they just
the Mac Brown
Saban going to come out of retirement 15 years from now and go coach South Carolina? Like, I don't see how they're going to really attract anybody. And with Clemson becoming just the powerhouse that they've been in recent history, like, yeah, just smack dab in the middle of the SEC and Clemson and State. Like, that job is not easy, and it's not getting easier.
Gary Pinkle?
Yeah, maybe.
Let's get Gary in there.
Yeah, somebody. Like, who's somebody that's got a national championship or something? I don't know. Like, Pete Carroll coming back. Going to the other USC. I don't know.
I don't think that's happening. Well, don't forget, folks, you can follow Matt Green on Twitter.com at Matt_W_Green. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com today. If you would like to get access to all of my previous episodes on this very feed, subscribe to the daily newsletter at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Again, that is sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Go to the Patreon, patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. And if you like listening to Matt and I banter about college football, the delightful college football season, the best since 2007, people are saying, make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you are an Apple Podcast listener. Matt, we have to start. The headline story.
Before we move on, I just thought of the perfect guy. 2027, South Carolina gets Urban Meyer.
Oh my goodness. Urban's actually not a crazy thing at this point.
You know what I mean? Maybe
that's not crazy.
Maybe things go really bad and he's kind of gets disgraced at that point. No one wants to touch him. Like, they already had that poll come out last week of, like, you know, at 130 FBS programs, like 85 AD said they would never even consider hiring Urban Meyer or something like that. It's like, maybe South Carolina, you know, a few years from now, bring him back out. You know, who knows?
I would not
put that out there. I just came up with it.
I mean, I don't hate that. That would not surprise me whatsoever. I mean, you already just saw that with Spurrier, the connection there. So
that's their go-to.
Yeah.
20 years from now, they'll go get Jim McElwain or something. I don't know.
Oh man, we're irritating so many South Carolina fans. You're good people.
Dan Mullen, I guess, would have been a better one. 20 years from now, they get Dan Mullen.
There you go. Really sad when they were really somber when they were leaving the stadium, and just seeing them deal with the surrender cobra in the first quarter. It was brutal. It's brutal. Not for me, though. Had a delightful, delightful experience with every Hendon Hooker, Teyon Evans run. The Teyon Evans touchdown run, just bonkers. Velus Jones coming to the end. No, but I digress. This is not a Tennessee-focused podcast.
It's good to see Tennessee taking care of the inferior opponents, mm-hmm. like straight blowing them out. So I think next week, Ole Miss coming to town. I think Lane Kiffin, that's going to be a good one.
Under the lights. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Prime time, right?
Yeah, 7:30.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that'll be a good one.
4.5 it opened. So Vegas doesn't know what to do with this one early on. So I wonder if that line moves as the week goes on. But it's 4.5 at the moment. Matt, your headline story. Let's start things off here. The headline story of the weekend for you is the SEC West Madness. Let's start there.
The SEC West is just absurd this year. Like, I literally said no more than, like, I would say 4 or 5 days ago that this 2 through 6 in the SEC West is up for grabs. Like, the only thing we know is that Bama is the best team in the West and that A&M is the worst team in the West. And everything else is just jumbled up in between and we'd all work itself out. And then A&M goes and beats Alabama. So now we know literally nothing about this division. Like, I think it's Arkansas and Auburn and is it maybe Ole Miss? No, not Ole Miss. Arkansas and Auburn both still, like, control their own destiny to win the SEC West at this point. Like, I'm not saying they're going to, but Alabama hasn't even necessarily just solidified themselves at the top of this division now. So we have absolutely no idea what's going to – it's starting to look like LSU might be the worst team in this division after – you know, I mean, Kentucky, they got blown out by a solid Kentucky team for sure. They're up to number 11 in the rankings, but this division is just bonkers right now.
I mean, Alabama now has to win every single game, including the SEC title game, to make the playoff.
Yeah, that's something that no one was even thinking about 3 days ago.
Mm-hmm. And then if you look – don't look now, Matt Green. Can I throw something at you?
Hit me.
I don't think A&M's losing another game this season.
Well, it's just so hard, right?
Look at their schedule. They're at Mizzou next week. It's a nice time to get Mizzou. They get Carolina at home, South Carolina. They get Auburn at home after that. 2 weeks because they get a bye after South Carolina ahead of Auburn. They go to Ole Miss, which is their last tough game. They get Prairie View, the second to last game of the season, and then at LSU to wrap things up. I think they're going to be favored in every game going forward. I would expect that.
That is a good call. Ole Miss, I feel like I'm still not sold on Ole Miss, really. Like, they won a great game with Arkansas, but they were also the home team, giving up 50 points. Like, they won the shootout and everything, but like, it wouldn't surprise me for them to lose to anybody else, you know, like for A&M to go into Oxford and beat them. Like, at this point, it won't surprise me. It won't surprise me. You know, maybe Auburn would be kind of surprising at this point. But with what the SEC West is right now, it's so hard to pinpoint. I mean, anything like last week. I mean, Arkansas, you know, gets absolutely just demolished by Georgia, like can't even move the ball, and so you're kind of just like, well, maybe Arkansas is a little overrated. We kind of jumped the gun on Arkansas, and then they follow it up the next week going to Oxford and racking up 600 yards and scoring 50 points. So it's just it's crazy what's going on in this division. And yeah, A&M, that's not even who I was thinking about. I was thinking about Arkansas having a legitimate shot to run the table, and like, not saying they can beat Bama, but like, who knows at this point, right? Like, obviously Bama beat Ole Miss big and Arkansas was in a 50-50 game with them, you know? So that's not necessarily saying that they're a better team by any means, but at this point, like, Arkansas should be favored. Like, their schedule moving forward is Auburn, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Mississippi State, at LSU, at Alabama, and then Missouri. So I could see them being favored in just about every game except for Alabama. So this division is just so up for grabs. Like, I think Ole Miss, we just kind of all decided like a few weeks back, like, oh, they're the clear number two, but they've played less teams than anybody really so far. It's like they've played two SEC games now. They've lost one and then won another one at the end when the team didn't get a 2-point conversion, you know? So they could easily be 0-2 in the conference, but I could see Alabama and Arkansas being the two best teams in the West too. So it's so hard to really pinpoint anything other than LSU is done and Orgeron is basically a dead man walking at this point.
Yeah, I think I'm sold on LSU being the worst team in the West. I think based on what we saw this weekend and where we're at with them, I think they're the clear-cut worst in that division. I mean, Ole Miss has got a brutal stretch. And anyone who's penciling in the Ole Miss game at Tennessee as a victory for Ole Miss is out of their mind. That's just, it's a toss-up at this point. I have no idea. LSU at home, they should be okay.
I agree with that. Like, I know I've given Tennessee a hard time this year, but, I mean, Ole Miss isn't really stopping anybody. So, Tennessee scoring a lot of points. Like, on the road, like, you know, Matt Corral has another one of his multi-interception games that we haven't seen from him yet in 2021. Like, yeah, that they could easily be on the ropes.
But, I mean, they still have to go to Auburn. They get a good Liberty team at home with Malik Willis, the Hugh Freeze Bowl. They get A&M still, and they go to Mississippi State to close. The Egg Bowl is always weird. I mean, Ole Miss has got at least two more losses, I think, on the schedule. I think they have two more.
Yeah, I can see that. Because Mississippi State is the team, I think, that's getting the least amount of respect.
Mm-hmm.
That honestly has winnable games the entire rest of the way. I wouldn't think they're going to beat Bama. That's this week at home. But like, just in terms of teams like Kentucky and Arkansas and Ole Miss and Auburn, like Mississippi State can beat or lose, can win or lose to any of those teams. So it's like, it's just, it seems like all of these games are swing games, and it's just going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's just so much fun that Bama is just not a shoo-in anymore. Like the fact that the SEC West is now open for business and that Alabama lost. I mean, it's still discombobulating, but I will say,
not make too much of it, right? I mean, remember back, 2015, after they lost to Ole Miss, it was like Saban dynasty is done. You know, all it done is, I think they literally won the championship that year, but then they've just won two since then? So like three championships since that loss, the back-to-back losses to Ole Miss when people thought it was over. So honestly, losing this early, it almost worries you more as a team competing with Alabama, because now you're like, okay, Saban's going to scrap everything and this team's going to be focused and they're going to know they have to be perfect. And when Bama's on a mission, they might just smoke everyone else on this schedule. Like, who knows?
Very possible. Very possible. But we're in uncharted waters. I mean, first loss to an unranked team in 100 games. You have he finally losing to an assistant. That's what I was getting at, Macarine. I wish I could replay the tape live on this show, because I said before the season, what did I say when we were previewing Alabama? Do you remember what I said about Alabama during this stretch?
I don't recall exactly.
When I saw that they had Kiffin and Jimbo back to back before the season, and I was like, man, if Saban's gonna finally lose to an assistant, because I said it on this podcast to friends, family for years, Saban will lose to an offensive assistant in the past. He's not gonna lose to a defensive guy. He's going to lose to an offensive assistant. He's not losing to Mel Tucker. He's not losing to whoever.
He's not gonna lose to them first.
Yeah.
Okay, he's so gonna. It's already off the table.
Yes, it's off the table now.
Do it now.
And I said I would not be surprised. I thought it was gonna be Lane Kiffin, but I was not surprised that it was one of Jimbo or Lane. Like, and the thing about Jimbo too is he's already won a title. Like, Jimbo might be now underrated because it's the contract. It's the fact that he has not won the big one yet at A&M, but he won it at Florida State. Now we're seeing how hard it is to win at Florida State post Jimbo and what that situation looks like without him. Jimbo is still an elite college football coach. He's still a top 10 college football coach, and he's established that. He's won a natty. All that's great. I don't know. I think it was just a gigantic, crazy win for A&M. Shout out to the Aggies, the 12th man, Jay Arnold, all those great folks who rushed the field. The mom who was crying. I retweeted that video tonight. Did you see that? Of the mom before the kick, the game winner by the A&M kicker.
I've seen that.
Incredible. She just like immediately like falls over and then jumps in the, rushes the field, and it was great. I mean, just an all-time great win. But we'll get more into A&M and Alabama and what actually happened there. I will say the other headline story of the weekend for me, Matt Green, is that everything is coming up Georgia, because if you look at where the playoff is headed, like if we get what it looked like now was the playoff, then Georgia is favored by 20 in both of their playoff games. And this is all coming up Georgia right now. Georgia's blasting Iowa. They're blasting Cincinnati. Like, if they get that kind of like, I just, everything is coming up Georgia. This is the first time they're number one in the AP poll since what, 1982? Is that what it was I saw?
It was the first unanimous.
Yeah, that's what it is.
AP poll, because they were AP. They were number preseason number one back in 2008 at Stafford's junior year, and then I think by the time they played Bama in that blackout game, they were like 4-0, but they were like number four or something. They just kept moving down for not blasting opponents. But yeah, man, this Georgia team, they look pretty much, they look complete. They look like the best team in college football. You know, out of 127 votes in the AP and Coaches Bowl, Georgia got 126 first place votes. So this, I've never experienced this as a Georgia fan, right? Where Georgia is just perceived to be as the clear number one team in the country. And it's just, it's pretty insane what they're doing right now with their backup quarterback, with, you know, probably five of probably their seven or eight best receivers we thought coming into the season all injured. Like, the defense has been relatively healthy or basically injury free, but so many injuries on the offensive side of the ball. But this defense has just been so dominant, and the offense is, I feel like, is just kind of getting overlooked for how dynamic they've been, just because this defense is just stealing headline after headline with shutout and takeaways and defensive touchdowns. It's just, it's kind of insane what they're doing. And yeah, I would say right now with Oklahoma, if Caleb Williams, like, we'll get to that at Oklahoma and Texas and everything, that looks like a way more dangerous team if Caleb Williams is playing the way he did against Texas. So but yeah, you look at Iowa and Cincinnati. I honestly think, I think after the Big Ten champion is going to just end up in the playoff with all these top 10 Big Ten teams we got right now, I feel like it's going to be Ohio State. And I feel like by the time the playoff comes around, like, Ohio State is going to be ready. They're going to be one of those juggernauts at the top. And, you know, I would just never rule out Alabama. So it's going to be interesting, Georgia being the favored team, if we get all the way to the SEC championship and Georgia and Alabama don't drop another one. So yeah, it'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, but we shall see. We shall see. Enjoy it, Iowa fans, because it's good. And I mean, they're going to be favored in every game, and they should be 12-0 at the end. Okay. Then if we get a 12-0 Iowa and 11-1 Ohio State, oof. That'll be fun.
I mean, what are the chances of, like, you know, we get 11-1 Alabama and 12-0 Georgia?
Very possible.
Georgia loses.
Mm.
It's like there's actual discussion on them getting in the playoffs still, right?
But if, man, that's the most Georgia thing to happen of all time.
But at that same scenario, Ohio State beats Iowa, like, there's like no conversation about Iowa to get in, most likely, right?
Yeah, that's it.
That's a little interesting. But I will say, to your preseason prediction about this Georgia football season, I would say Georgia fans have to be having a whole lot of fun, right? Through six games.
Wait, hold on. Didn't I also say they should be favored to win the national title this year? Weren't you getting mad at me for saying that they, like, the pressure's on Kirby because this is a team that should win a national title? Wasn't that the whole discussion? That was my whole thing about why it might not be fun this season for Georgia fans, because the expectations are sky high and it's legitimate that they really should win a national title this year.
But see, that doesn't mean they're not going to enjoy every step along the way. You know, it's like, I think it's because Georgia fans, while they are, like, so desperate for a national championship, they know that they clearly have the guy that's going to get them there. And it almost feels like a comfort level in, like, we're so good right now with this guy at the helm. Like, he's going to win one at some point. Just enjoy.
Okay, you're not
the ride.
Talking about Stetson Bennett. I thought you were talking about Stetson Bennett for a second there, and I was about to pass out.
I'm talking about Kirby Smart.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so I'm saying, like, Georgia knows they got the guy that he's going to get Georgia to a championship. You look at how wide open it seems to be right now, Alabama losing, and if you get in a playoff with someone like Iowa, Oklahoma, and Cincinnati, the pressure is definitely going to be on. It's like, we don't have Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama in this playoff. Like, no disrespect to all those teams. They're going to be very good teams if they get all the way to the playoff. But in terms of that, like, it definitely feels like this is the year it's opening up for Georgia, kind of like you're saying. But I still don't feel like there's this just pressure on Kirby Smart necessarily. And this, the basically the main argument I make about Kirby Smart too is like, if the pressure's on Kirby Smart, well then that pressure's on Lincoln Riley. That pressure is on Ryan Day. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird that those guys are somehow excluded from that. Oh, there's so much pressure because all the talent on these rosters. It's like, those guys have as much talent as anybody in college football. Like, they also are loaded and have national championship expectations, and they don't play in the same conference with Nick Saban at Alabama. So that's really where I come from with the when it comes to the argument of Kirby being under pressure.
Okay, that's fair. That is fair. Matt, it's time for the green line segment of this podcast. What is your green line stat of the weekend, my friend?
Well, I don't want to steal your thunder on this Iowa-Penn State game, but I know, as you alluded to, they were a different team with Sean when Sean Clifford left that game, and that's why we were both kind of, you know, feeling some kind of way, right, about Iowa's win over Penn State. But I will give you the stats, my friend. Five drives in this game, they had Sean Clifford. Penn State had 208 yards and scored 17 points. All right, on five drives. They had 11 drives without Sean Clifford. What was the guy's name? Roberson?
Yes.
11 drives with him as quarterback, 48 yards they had, and 3 points, six punts, two turnovers on downs, two picks, no first downs on five of the last six drives. I guess it's more than just one stat of the week, but that's just the Penn State just being an absolute completely different team with Sean Clifford and without Sean Clifford. And I thought that was the without a doubt the difference on Saturday.
And I mean, it's brutal. In fairness to Taquan Robertson, like, that's the worst possible spot to be in. This Iowa defense on the road, and you're not preparing with the starters all week, and you just being thrown in there and like, hey, go keep us up on top of maybe the nation's second best defense, maybe the best defense, depending on who you ask, who is just getting takeaway after takeaway after takeaway after takeaway. The Hawkeyes secondary and group is just preposterous. Like, their defense is legitimate. I don't believe in this offense in Iowa, but it hasn't mattered to this point. It's amazing how many different parallels there are with Iowa and Georgia, honestly, across the board. But
except for Iowa just hasn't really dominated. Like, it seems like I feel like I see this Iowa in like 2019 Georgia. You know what I mean? Like, they just, it seems like better teams would have beaten Iowa by now. You know what I mean? Like, Penn State, I mean, they did dominate against Maryland, you know, but they messed around with Colorado State for three quarters. Like, Penn State, we saw what they were once Sean Clifford left the game. Like, hey, that injuries are part of the game, you know. Like, Iowa's defense is sick, but I still like they're. You would think just with this identity of being a defensive team that they would also just kind of be a dominant run team. But I think that's why I'm still skeptical of Iowa's, because they're just not very – they're not dynamic running the ball. And it's like, if you're not going to be – if you're going to have a game manager, passer, you know, hold possession and everything like that classic kind of defensive team does, I feel like you have to be elite running the ball. And that's just where I haven't been that impressed with Iowa this year.
That's fair. Well, let's get into our pick'em game recap. How did we do this weekend, Matt?
Well, I didn't notice this on our show when we made our picks, but 8 of the 11 picks were the exact same.
Oh, so yeah, not so a lot of movement this week.
Yeah, so I think 9 of the same picks were like as far as win loss, because I know I picked Michigan State to win, but I had Rutgers covering, but so yeah, we had 8 picks that were identical. So you can imagine our scores were pretty similar, and they were. We both went 9-2 overall.
Ooh.
And we both went 7-3-1 against the spread.
Oh, so we were identical even against the spread.
Yeah. So because you actually took Penn State and I took Iowa, and that was a 3-point push right there. So. Yeah, a lot of similarities on this sheet. I think Arkansas and Ole Miss were one of the ones we disagreed on, and it's like I won that against the spread, but lost it overall, vice versa. So it was a good week.
Mm. I like it. I like it.
Let me bring it. Hold on 1 second. That brings you to. Oh, hold on. I didn't add that up. Keep it going. I'll add that up and we'll get back to it.
Well, let's start with the game of the weekend that none of us saw coming. This game did not make our pick'em recap, but I just feel like we have to start here. We've touched on a little bit. A&M knocks off Alabama on a last second field goal. We have dogged this A&M offense for weeks now on this podcast. Like it's been bad. It's just destroyed their season. It has, like, the Haynes King injury and just this offense has not looked right all year long. They get Whittemeyer involved here. They get the two-headed monster at running back involved here. Zach Calzada has the game of his life, Matt Green. Okay, so I have a stat for you from PFF's Anthony Treche. Highest passing grades versus Alabama since 2019. Number 3, Joe Burrow, LSU, 76.9. Justin Fields, Ohio State, 82.9. Number 1 since 2019, Zach Calzada, A&M, 83.1.
That's impressive.
Zach Calzada, man.
I wish you had gone back to 2018, man. My guy Jake Fromm lit up Alabama in 2018, but, you know, we'll keep it moving.
QBs to beat Nick Saban's Alabama. Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton, Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, all-time great college quarterbacks. And then Zach Calzada. It just doesn't happen like this. I mean, outside of UL Monroe, who could forget the Warhawks?
Steven Garcia is part of that club as well.
That's true. What did you make of this game? What was your biggest takeaways?
I thought the biggest takeaway was that Zach Calzada, like you said, looked like a completely different player. Like he looked comfortable. His throws had like zip on them. Like he actually made throws down the field. Like it's almost like Jimbo just went to him. He's like, look, just forget everything you've done for the first half of the season and just start slinging that thing, man. Like I was impressed with how I feel like the turning point was early on, like in the first quarter. Right after that Alabama fumble on the second drive, A&M comes out, runs it 6 straight times, and then hits the little play action, like the 5-yard touchdown pass. I feel like that just gave it, put them up, what, 17-3 at that point?
Mm-hmm.
And once you're up 17-3 at home in that sort of atmosphere, like everyone in that entire stadium believes Texas A&M can win. And now it's like, I feel like the floodgates are open. It's like all bets are off. Like, once this team believes they can play with you and they can win, I feel like it was a completely different game after that. You can see them how they were just playing with confidence. And I think after that drive was when they drove down after that touchdown, they drove down and threw the pick on the 1-yard line. And I feel like that says something to a team right there too. Third and goal on the 1 and we're throwing it. It's like, we're Alabama. Like, I don't know. I know there's a lot of second guessing there. And you got to be impressed with how. And so once they were able to get up like this, we know how good Texas A&M's defense is. It was just, it's been the offense that struggled so much. So you finally got to see like, this is how this Texas A&M defense can impact a game. Like they played great. And this is the second road game of the season for Alabama. And this, they could have lost both of them. You know, they've looked like a completely different team on the road. They've looked mortal on the road, and I think like they're gonna have more tests. Like you would never really predict anyone to beat Bama, right? Because you just kind of assume they're better than everyone. But there's gonna be tests. Like, I'm not saying Mississippi State this week with the cowbells is gonna knock them off, but they're gonna be challenged again. They're gonna have to go on the road again, and I'll be interested to see what happens.
For sure. Another important thing: 0 sacks allowed by the A&M offensive line in this game. I thought that was critical too, and that's part of the reason Calzada succeeded. And this offensive line has not been good. He has not had time, and it's been rough early on for the Aggies offensive line. And if they figure that out and Calzada has time and he has this newfound confidence, who knows? But either way, great, great win. And a win Jimbo needed. Just so much. Jimbo Fisher needed that win so much. And now SEC West is just wild.
I don't want to jump to too many conclusions because of the game, right? Because it's like A&M wasn't the better team, I wouldn't necessarily say, right? Like, they played well enough to deserve to win, but like Alabama looked like the better team. It felt like a perfect storm for how you upset somebody. You know, you like after the blocked punt, it felt like this is Alabama's game, and then they answer that with a kick return to the house. It was just like they made all those big plays that you have to make to upset somebody. But I don't think that necessarily means that Alabama's not going to run the table and win the national championship by any means. You know, I think this is still a juggernaut. That's one of the best teams in college football.
That's fair. That is fair. Penn State, Iowa, like you alluded to, Penn State was up 17-3 in Kinnick Stadium prior to Sean Clifford getting knocked out of the game. Brutal, brutal blow for Clifford, who's just a warrior. He's taken a beating all year long. Tough kid. I read a Pat Forty's SI piece on him, and Pat talked to his high school coach, and he actually went to the same high school that Luke Kuechly went to. It's like an all-boys Catholic juggernaut. I think it was Ohio, I want to say. But
that's cool.
Yeah, so he's a tough kid. Tough kid. And that had to be brutal, because this has just been the perfect season for Clifford and this group, and I can't shake the fact that they would have won this game, and it was a great moment for Iowa. They fought hard. Spencer Petras still completed barely 50% of his passes. That Iowa offense still very clunky. The defense is otherworldly and made Roberson, who entered this game for Clifford, 4-star himself, just not ready. And it was brutal. This coming from Lions 247. Quote, although it's purely speculative at this point, Penn State sure seemed primed to push for a 6-0 record and a number 2 national ranking approximately 3 minutes into the second quarter of a Saturday afternoon showdown at Iowa. Following a 14-play drive capped by a 32-yard field goal from Jordan Stout, the Nittany Lions had produced points on 3 of 4 possessions, moving the ball with authority against this Hawkeyes defense. Yeah, I think that, I mean, it stinks that that's kind of where we're at, but I will never know, because Clifford left the game. It's not fair to Iowa. They deserve to be happy. They won the game. They played with the hand they were dealt. But I also think this is a big loss for the Big Ten, because like we alluded to earlier, if Iowa runs the gauntlet and loses to Penn State or Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, I don't think they're getting consideration in the college football playoff. However, if Penn State were to lose to Ohio State in a couple weeks after winning this game, and then meets Pence, or I guess goes, wait, hold on, I guess that wouldn't work. Never mind.
Well, you'd have one of those teams getting the scenario of like not making it,
skipping the Big Ten. Yeah, I just realized as I was saying that. Yeah. So never mind. But either way,
I mean, that's possible. That's happened though, because you kind of work your way up in the poll, and then you just
hide out. Yeah,
the season. Yeah, so you just kind of work, because I mean, I think that is how that your Penn State won the Big Ten. Ohio State got in the playoff.
That's right.
Not even playing in the conference championship.
That's right. So we'll see. I mean, their dreams are not completely dashed. I mean, they could still beat Ohio State, and like you said, still run the gauntlet. But man, it looks like Clifford's not going to be available next weekend either. Brutal, brutal blow. What did you make of the Nittany Lions and the Hawkeyes?
Yeah, I think this game went very similar to what we thought. It was going to be like a defensive game. But, you know, once you saw Penn State jump up, and then, like, no disrespect to Taquan Roberson, right? But he looked like a guy who had no business playing in that game. He just looked completely just, you know, over his head, basically. And like you saw that Iowa had no respect for the downfield passing game once he was in the game, and they just shut down the run. So it was like, this Iowa team is legit. I wonder, like, the committee does take these kinds of things into account though, right? Like if Penn State does beat Ohio State, or if they are, I mean, I guess if they beat Ohio State, they're getting in the Big Ten championship. But if they are in some sort of scenario like you're talking about, like, people are going to go back and talk about how Sean Clifford wasn't there for the second half of that Iowa game, and it's a completely different game with him. You know, like that's why we like a committee of people over computers deciding this playoff. So it's really tough, because I feel like this Big Ten, it feels like we're missing something, right? With these elite teams in the Big Ten, it's like, I trust that the team that comes out of this conference is a good team. But like week after week, Penn State has seemed solid and they've taken care of business, but it hasn't looked good. And like this was looking good early on, right? So it was like, okay, well, maybe Penn State is actually that team in the Big Ten. And even Iowa, like as good as their defense has been, people are still questioning the offense. So it's like it just feels like there's going to be all kinds of kind of – it's going to look like madness during the regular season, but I feel like at the end of the day, it's going to be Ohio State once everything comes down to it. They're just starting to look like the most complete team in the Big Ten to me.
I would agree. But we'll have to see about the defense. We'll have to see. That's true, too. Let's move on. Stanford, Arizona State. That happened on Friday night. Arizona State takes care of business there. Did you see the lateral pick six in this game from Arizona State?
Yes, that was incredible.
Heads up play.
I want to see more of these things.
Yeah. Arizona State for you. That is my question. Coming out of this game, they only have one loss to this point. Are the Sun Devils your favorite to win the Pac-12? Like if they run the gauntlet now, 11-1, did they get playoff consideration for you? Jaden Daniels turning it on. They're playing competent football.
I think if they're 11-1, I mean, they have to have consideration, right? Because, I mean, then, especially if Oregon's also 11-1, I mean, this is, if these two teams are meeting in the Pac-12 championship at 11-1, I mean, what is that? Probably number 9 versus number 10 or something? Like, they're definitely going to be up there in the polls. I mean, Oregon's around 9 or 10 right now, so they could be around the top 5. So, I don't know. I feel like I'm still skeptical of Arizona State. They are starting to look like the best team in the Pac-12, but like Jaden Daniels has just, like this passing attack isn't necessarily what I thought it was going to be. Like he's a hell of an athlete, but I was expecting more of like this guy's going to be an NFL first round pick, right? Like, I mean, that's kind of the way he's talked about. Like I was expecting more of a pocket passer who can use his legs. And so far he seems like he's a much more dynamic player with his legs than he has been through the air, you know, and Oregon's kind of set up the same way. So I feel like they're definitely two evenly matched teams. And it's hard to say who's better at this point.
Yeah, I think that's true. But we'll see. I mean, they big game. I know you're going to be up for this. Just go ahead and pencil it in, Matt Green, next Saturday. I don't know if he'll make the pick-em. I would hope so. Arizona State at Utah next weekend. So that should be interesting. But we shall see. Next on our pick-em, Matt Green, we have OU Texas. What a game. Texas got to it, my friend. They got to it. Caleb Williams finally gets the call. Spencer's pulled. Just pulls on a all-time great comeback. The biggest comeback, I believe, in the Red River rivalry. Whatever you want to call it. I cannot say that. That's just too much alliteration.
Red leather, yellow leather.
Yeah. The shootout is what they call it. So this was crazy. Everything that you would expect. The SEC is just chomping at the bit here. They're loving it. They're loving that this is coming to this conference and this kind of game's coming over.
I'm glad you started there, because I felt some kind of way about the SEC chance happening on college game day. I'm like, I guess you guys have been talking shit forever. Now you get it. Now you get that the SEC is the best. That's why we take pride in it down here. But like you're still in the Big 12 for this year and probably next year and maybe the year after that, right? Is it 2024?
I don't believe that's happening. I don't think it's going
to
keep
probably
going.
Probably not, but it's just so weird here at an SEC chant to start off college game day. It's like they're trying to impress their new friends, their new neighbors. So I don't know. I wasn't sure how to feel.
All right. I mean, yeah, we'll see. We'll see on that one. So, Michigan State, Rutgers. So, Michigan State, this was one we differed on. You thought Rutgers might cover here.
Hold on. You don't want to touch on Oklahoma, Texas more?
I mean,
I I feel like this is like is Caleb Williams the guy now? Like, he's got to be, right?
I don't know. Riley.
I don't want Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler seems like the guy that might go to the transfer portal like next week, honestly. Like, I feel like Caleb Williams, I think this offense looked like what we thought Oklahoma was going to be with Caleb Williams. Like, I don't want to overreact to just playing Texas. Like, we don't know necessarily how good Texas is, but like their offense just looks so much more dangerous with Caleb Williams.
That's fair. I don't know. I also just think Texas is just like, they're moving into the LSU territory for me when they move into the SEC. Like, Oklahoma is going to be fine. Like, especially in the East, which we expect OU to be in the East, right? And Texas in the West?
No, I think the East and West thing's going to be completely gone.
That's true.
I think I don't like the pods idea. I had my own idea for the just a couple, like, or three locked rivalries for every team. I hope they do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how you decide the who's in the SEC championship after that, but we've talked about, you know, maybe the expanded playoff and everything, if the SEC championship even still exists after that. So it's not going to be East and West, but yeah, it's going to be, I've said that same thing. Like, Oklahoma is an elite team, right? Like, they're not going to come in and just dominate the SEC the way they dominate the Big 12, but you know, they might have some 9-3, 10-2 seasons, but they're going to be one of the best teams in the SEC. Like
it's going to be a surprise if they're not top three every year.
Say that again.
It's going to be a surprise if they're just not a top three finisher in the SEC every year. Yeah, without a doubt.
I think Texas could see themselves at like the 8th, 9th, 10th best teams in the SEC some years, like early on.
Because
I think A&M got that boost for kind of joining the SEC. It was kind of like something they had that Texas didn't. And they also had Johnny Manziel that started off. It kind of was just a perfect storm of just making the school cool and everything. But I don't know if Texas gets that same bump. And it's like Texas is already recruiting really well, right? Like, they're like, Tom Herman was getting top five classes. Like, getting good players hasn't been Texas's issue. It's just like they just haven't been good. They just, their best season, they go 10-4 and a couple of 8-5 seasons and things like that. So Texas, I definitely think, is in for a rude awakening when they join the SEC. But it's interesting how we're like talking about this game, because if we'd said last week, like before this game started, like Oklahoma beats Texas 55-48, you're like, okay, Sark, you know, he's got this thing moving in the right direction. Texas, you know, they're not there yet. He's first year head coach, yada, yada. Like, they're not as far away as you might think, you know? But with how it happened, it almost felt so much worse, didn't it? Like, you're up 28-7 at the end of the first. What was it? 41-23 near, like, the end of the third quarter? Like, to lose this game the way you did, it was, it almost can't be like a stepping stone, like a positive momentum, like a moral victory, if you will, like kind of like Florida playing Alabama. Obviously that hasn't necessarily translated moving forward, but like it was a loss that felt good because you're like, okay, maybe the program is moving in the right direction. It's like with how it happened, you just gave up the huge lead to the backup quarterback. Like, oh man, it's hard to be positive after that.
I agree. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Michigan State Rutgers, they have a three-headed monster. Peyton Thorne, Walker, and now Naylor, who is fast as crap. And Peyton Thorne found him deep. And I am so excited for State versus Michigan now, especially Michigan passing that test on the road. Nebraska. I thought this was interesting, and I want to get your perspective on this. Michigan State, Michigan. So, scoring offense to this point, Michigan State is averaging 36.7 points per game. Michigan, 38.5. They are neck and neck. I am so ready for this game.
Hold on now. I think you're making my point for me.
Okay.
Like, I think Michigan State, I've been so impressed by Michigan State. They're probably, like, Iowa, I feel like you'd probably have to say, is the most surprising team this year, just to see them at number 2 in the rankings right now. But they were, what, preseason top 15?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Michigan State's got to be the biggest surprise of college football, especially how they're doing it, the way you're talking scoring points offensively.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Rutgers was a solid team to go on the road, take care of business. Like, this was a game for 2 quarters, but you took care of business and put them away. But at Indiana, noon kickoff? I'm afraid this is a trap game, sir. Like, I'm worried about him next week because what you're saying, Michigan, Michigan State, like, this is turning into a top 10. Like, what was the last top 10 Michigan, Michigan State matchup we had? Was TJ Duckett there? Like,
yeah,
that's a long time ago. So, like, I feel like this is such a huge game, and it's the anticipation is building. I worry, like, Indiana's a team that no one's talking about now. Like, I worry that that's a game that could sneak up on them, and they could get beat looking ahead.
Yeah.
But as far as performance last week, it was definitely what you needed.
Well, there you go. There you go. We'll see. We'll see. Michigan State, Mel Tucker, if there was a coach of the year, I mean, Mel Tucker has locked that thing up.
No one wants to talk Heisman because none of the quarterbacks are having that were supposed to be good or having good seasons. But I mean, Kenneth Walker III, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy's got to be near the top of any sort of Heisman list you got. But I don't hate that we're not talking Heisman 6 weeks in. I prefer to wait to that for the end of the season anyway. But got to give a shout out to what this guy's doing. So he almost has 1,000 yards rushing so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because no one's really separated themselves to this point. Like, we really don't have a clear front runner whatsoever.
Yeah, and that's why I think people need to reevaluate it. Like, it doesn't need to be best quarterback or best running back in the country. Obviously, Devontae Smith is a receiver, just won it last year. But, you know, there's other players out there. There's Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame. You know, there's guys like N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis. Not that I'm starting the Heisman campaign for them, but Jordan Davis is an unblockable person. Like, he's obviously one of the best players in college football, and just in terms of how important he is to Georgia's success. But
what doesn't help him is he has just so much talent around him, like the Jalen Carters and everything else. Like, that doesn't help him. I don't know. We shall see if someone separates themselves in the next couple of weeks, but I don't know. I think the favorite should be Teyon Evans. Arkansas, Ole Miss. Arkansas is now 28th in S&P Plus, 39th in offense in S&P Plus. So I pose this question to you, Matt Green. After this loss, going forward on two, I like it. Pittman tried something, nothing to lose, showing guts, whatever. Arkansas season, does it go off the rails from here? Two straight losses.
Oh, see, I don't think so at all. Thought you would. I would say it was. I would definitely be positive after that game.
Okay.
If I was an Arkansas fan, because I think after the performance of versus Georgia, I think we were all questioning if this team is even good at all. Like, maybe we were a little jumping the gun on how good this offense is. But I think they were the 17th ranked offense in the country before that Georgia game, and then it dropped to like 40th or something like that.
Mm.
So to bounce back and drop 50 points in this game versus Ole Miss, like 600 yards, I think that showed like this is still one of the better teams in the West. And I mean, I guess the Auburn, like, that's the thing about Arkansas is you just don't really know in this SEC West, you know, you still don't know who the best teams are. So it's going to work itself out, and they could lose two more games, three more games, you know, just because of how loaded this side of the conference is. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Arkansas finishes this season, you know, 9-3, like just looking at their schedule moving forward. Like, we kind of talked about it earlier, like Auburn, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Mississippi State, at LSU, at Alabama and Missouri. Like, I think all of those, I think you would only pencil in one guaranteed loss there. So I'm not, like, Ole Miss beat Arkansas. I'm not necessarily convinced Ole Miss is still better than Arkansas. You know what I mean? Like, moving forward, like, Arkansas already has those wins over A&M, that win over A&M on their belt, right? And I guess that's the only other SEC, that's the only SEC win so far. But Ole Miss still has a lot of those good teams on their schedule other than Alabama. And so I'm curious to see, like, when you obviously they give up 50 points too, right? Arkansas's defense just got scored on a bunch. But Ole Miss, if they get into these shootouts with anybody, like, you can lose games like that. So I'm really curious to see where these teams go moving forward. Like, Ole Miss, I mean, they should be a Sugar Bowl team, right? Like, they like, do you see Ole Miss finishing 11-1 or 10-2 or like what do you think? How many games do you think they drop before it's all
I think
sudden?
They drop two more. So I'm going to say 9-3. I think they finish 9-3.
Okay, and then Arkansas. What would you have?
How 8-4
Arkansas? You think 8-4 Mm-hmm. See, I could see that.
8-4 feels about right for them.
Who knows? They could beat Bama. Who knows?
Two regular season losses to Bama. Two SEC West, for that matter. I don't think he's losing to Pittman and Jimbo the same year.
Who's Ole Miss losing to? They losing in Knoxville?
I mean, it's very possible. It's very possible. I mean, you get the Hugh Freeze thing is wild.
That'll be on the pick'em. So we'll have you go on the record for that game.
Hugh Freeze is going to be amped up. Malik Willis is a stud, and he's actually someone who can.
Hugh Freeze is going to be amped up.
Oh yeah, Hugh Freeze, the Ole Miss Bowl. Like I don't know, man.
What does Hugh Freeze have to do with this?
Hugh Freeze coached at Ole Miss. What are you talking about? Liberty Ole Miss.
We're talking about Tennessee Ole Miss.
No, I already moved on. I moved on to potential losses after that.
Oh, okay. You're throwing me off here. Okay. I was not following you.
But Tennessee fans were obsessed with hiring Hugh Freeze.
Damn, I didn't even realize that. Ole Miss has these sexy coaching matchups with Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Liberty. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and then at Mississippi State to close the year, the Egg Bowl, like that's not a guarantee whatsoever. I have no idea.
Oh, without a doubt. I think Mississippi State's the most hard-to-read team in the West so far. But I respect Lane Kiffin. I don't know if you saw after the game, the little self-deprecating interview he had. He was like, we'll finally get to eat some popcorn now or something like that. And then said, like, I won't leave this interview early or something like that. So I respected him because it was a little douchey what he did last week. I'll be honest. It was just.
Well, I think that's the difference with Lane Kiffin, right? Is that he has clearly grown up a lot where it's like, and I don't even think it was that douchey. I just think he was just like excited and amped up. And he's like, I think this is going to be a high scoring back and forth game. And it just didn't turn out that way.
Just right before the game, just get.
Yeah, whatever. But I don't disagree. I don't disagree. But like ultimately it was harmless and he owned it and he. I just think there is a lot of growth there. And I think this week showed that, like you said, and I don't know. I hope Michael Wilbon saw that.
Without a doubt. But I respected it. Like poking some fun at himself. But Ole Miss moving forward. It should be interesting to see where they go from here.
West Virginia, Baylor. Baylor wins another big one. They still have one loss. 525 yards total for the Baylor Bears as they blow out the Mountaineers. This coming from West Virginia's rival site. Quote, West Virginia had under 100 rushing yards yet again. That's 18. Here you go, Matt Green. That's 18 of the 28 games that West Virginia has played under Neil Brown that they failed to eclipse the century mark on the ground. That's kind of bonkers, right?
Yeah, that's not going to win you a lot of games.
No.
Yeah, it can't be that one-dimensional. But
it's wild how bad they are on the road versus who they are at home. The difference between West Virginia on the road and at home is they're like the Colorado Rockies of college football. When they're away from the confines of Morgantown, they're just a completely different football team, the same way the Rockies are when you leave Coors Field. It's just a little bit different.
That's a great call. My buddy in Vegas, I felt good about this. I had a buddy that was in Vegas this past weekend, and he gave me like a parlay he was trying to do. And one of the games he had was Baylor West Virginia, and I was like if I'm giving someone else advice about their money, you know, I'm like, I'm not telling you what to do at all. You know what I mean? I'm like, hey, I think this, but you know, anything could happen, right? Like, I do not want you to blame me for losing hundreds of dollars. But I was like, the one I felt most confident about was Baylor at like -7 or something like that. And one reason is West Virginia, obviously, on the road. We always talk about that. But Baylor just looks like a complete team. Like, I know they lost to Oklahoma State last week, but it was on the road. Like, I still feel like Baylor might be the second best team in the Big 12 this year. Like, I could see them beating Texas. I could see them, like, challenging Oklahoma. Like, I feel like I still like Baylor a lot this year. Do you know who they have this week?
It's a big one, right?
It's a random big one. In the middle of October, they got BYU.
That's who it is. Yeah. The Jeff Grimes Bowl.
Yeah, that's a crazy matchup when I saw that earlier. So BYU, just gotta respect this schedule. Like, oh, I didn't even think about the fact of the future Big 12 game we got right here with BYU.
Yes.
They've already taken out the Pac-12 South.
Yeah.
Now they're moving on to the Big 12. So.
And Baylor, just like I said, the Jeff Grimes Bowl, they just plucked their OC to save their season. Jeff Grimes, who was the architect behind that Zach Wilson offense for the Cougs last year. He is Baylor's offensive coordinator who replaced Larry Fedora. Dave Aranda lucked out. Jeff Grimes, man, putting in some work.
Yeah, that's looked like a, that's looked like a great hire so far.
That's going to be a great game. I'm excited for that one.
ESPN.
There you go. Your Georgia Bulldogs take care of the Auburn Tigers handedly. In this one, there was a bad targeting call at one point in this one. Bo Nix was whining a lot.
Oh, you thought that was a bad one Monday?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I mean, I hate targeting,
yeah,
you know, in general, but it's like, that was almost an obvious one. It was just okay. Like the helmet right to like the face mask. Like, and you know, Monday, he got ejected last year in the Georgia Auburn game. It was like the first punt of the game or something like that. I think that was a bad call last year. But yeah, you hate to see dudes get ejected for trying to make tackles, especially around the goal line. You know, it's the second time it's happened to Auburn this year. But this game went basically exactly how I saw it going. Like, I think what we all worried the most about was, I think what talked about last week was, like, Stetson Bennett played in some big games, right? It went at Alabama, but it wasn't a full capacity 2020 season. So this was his first, like, true road start in a full capacity stadium. And we all know how loud Auburn can get. So I think that was probably the one thing that Georgia fans were worrying the most about. But, you know, they got off to the hot start, like, well, maybe not the quickest start. Like, Auburn was moving the ball early, but I thought the 17-3 lead they had in the first half was just kind of the difference in a good team and a not so good team. Like, Auburn's not a bad team, but it was just, it didn't feel like a 14-point lead going into the half, but Georgia executed the opportunities they had and Auburn just didn't, you know? And like, that's kind of the difference to where these two teams are. And I just think, like, my brother asked me a question before this game started. He was just like who's, because Georgia's got so many offensive weapons that are, you know, that we've known are out. And then there's so many that the game starts and you're like, well, where the hell is Jermaine Burton? Where's Kenny McIntosh? And like, oh yeah, it turns out they're hurt too. It's like I said, five of like the top seven or eight receivers coming to this season have been out. And this Georgia offense is still making plays in the passing game. Like, you're seeing Ladd McConkey, Brock Bowers, and Adonai Mitchell be like the three of the biggest targets for Stetson Bennett or JT Daniels, whoever's been in so far this year. So, but my brother asked me, like, who's the offensive weapon, like, you feel confident about? Cause we were both kind of worried about, like, you know, if Stetson Bennett's gonna have to make plays, like, who's the guy that's gonna make plays offensively? And my answer was Todd Monken. Like, I just trust Todd Monken scheming guys open. I don't think it necessarily matters if Auburn sells out to stop the run. Like, Georgia's and Stetson Bennett is competent enough to just, you know, get guys open and hit the open man. And that's really exactly what you saw. Like, you saw Georgia, like, Ladd McConkey just coming out party here, just hit multiple. Like, if Bennett doesn't overthrow him on that one, he has two 50-yard touchdowns in this game. So his ability to get behind the defense is just not what any Georgia fans were expecting this year. But Stetson Bennett just dropping a perfect dime on that deep ball. Like, Georgia just capitalized on the opportunities they had. And then in the second half, like, even Auburn kind of gave a fight at it there. And it was 24-10 in the second half. But you just saw this Georgia defense just come out, or this Georgia offense just come out and absolutely pound the ball on the ground. So it was like they really just took all the clock away in the fourth quarter. And I feel like that was like the most dominant part of this game, was just Georgia, I think, ran the ball 10 straight plays when they're up 27-10 to just put this game away, like a 6-7 minute drive. Like this was just, I think Georgia looks like the best team in the country. And I think this Auburn, we don't know how good Auburn is, right? Like, it's still such a question, but we know what the atmosphere in Jordan Hare is like, and we know Auburn's got some pretty good players. You know, this is a quality win on the road. And like, this is the worst defensive performance of the year. They gave up 10 points, 46 rushing yards. Like, Auburn did have over 300 yards of total yards in this one, but Yeah, it was just a dominant performance. Four sacks, and it would have been more if Bo Nix wasn't the throwaway king. Like this guy finds a way to throw the ball away, unlike any quarterback I've ever seen.
Josh Allen can do that too. Him and Mahomes tonight, watching those, they can get it out of there, and they're pretty special when it comes to throwaways and moving.
They can also hit receivers down the field too.
That's true.
That's pretty important. Bo Nix has got him on throwing it away, though. That guy has not taken a sack. I mean, that is just crazy. Like, what did you think about that one early in the game that he just, like, flicked it? It was like, I thought it was a fumble live. And it's just like, you're getting sacked and you just flick it? And, like, what are you doing? Like, at some point, you're going to turn the ball over just trying to throw it away. But I won't question the throwaway king's methods. He finds a way to get rid of it.
Yeah. Auburn's like the weirdest team to figure out too in the SEC West now, I think. They're just average. Like, they're somewhere in the middle. Like, I know they're not the best. We know that now. We just know they're also not the worst. They're somewhere in the middle. I don't know where in the middle, but they're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I have literally no idea. Like, cause so many of these games are still on the schedule that like, yeah, they could beat Arkansas. Like, I don't think they're going to beat Arkansas, but they could. They could beat Ole Miss. Like, nothing's going to surprise you in the West, which is why I think none of them are really going to, you know, rise up. I think you're going to see a lot of 8-4s and 9-3s in this regular.
Well, someone has to lose to each other. That's the whole thing. Is like, I'm curious.
7-5. So, yeah, it's you just have absolutely no idea who at this point.
11th. An offense in S&P Plus Georgia Bulldogs to this point. Does that concern you?
Does that concern me?
Yeah, being 11th right now in S&P Plus and offensive efficiency.
I would say absolutely not. Like, okay. With this defense, like, I think Georgia
number one in defense in S&P Plus.
I think they could be 30th in S&P Plus and be in good shape. Honestly,
well, you can't win a national title that way. We it hasn't happened to this point.
It's debatable.
Okay,
especially with Stetson. Like, this is the backup quarterback. You know, like. George is playing with their backup quarterback.
Oh, speaking of, can I ask you a question?
And you're winning 34-10 in Jordan-Hare. Like, it's kind of absurd. What's that?
So, I pointed out Carson Beck on the sideline during this game. The family was not on board. The women I was with on Saturday, not on board. They were like, oh.
He's not a good-looking guy?
Not a good-looking guy. JT Daniels, mom's not a fan. She's mentioned that multiple times. She's like, not a looker.
I mean, they can't all have Stetson Bennett's looks, you know? So they can't all be perfect 10s like that.
Is Stetson Bennett the most attractive in that quarterback room?
I don't think I'm qualified to answer that, but
we'll get back to us. Go.
I don't
with
know. Women like the long hair. I don't know. I'm sure Brock Vandegrift does something for some women out there. JT
women
Davis
love Jake Fromm. Hair. Jake Fromm was like universally adored.
Is that right?
Yeah, I never understood that one.
Yeah, I guess it's he was like a grown man at like 16 years old. So I guess it's one of those things. He's got the rugged good looks, I guess. I don't know.
I was
you'll have to get an expert opinion.
Yeah. I didn't really get those kind of looks. Wake Forest, Syracuse, the cardiac kid, Sam Hartman, balled out in this one. Garrett Schrader ran all over the place. Former Mississippi State legend, Garrett Schrader with his neck beard. Dino Babers. That Syracuse team is frisky. Like, they're not good, but they're average. They fight hard. They really play for that man. But Wake Forest survives another week. Could you see them still making it through? Can they make it to the ACC title game unscathed, Matt Green?
I was waiting for you to ask this question because there is an absolute 0% chance.
Oh, no.
This team goes undefeated. And or runs the table in the regular season undefeated. Like,
okay.
I'm sorry. I'm no disrespect to Wake Forest. Appreciate what you've done so far, but 3-point wins over Louisville, overtime win over Syracuse. Like, this team goes at Army. Like, do I know they're going to beat Army next week? Like,
ooh, that's brutal. Are we going to be able to tell the difference? The black and gold on black and gold?
That's going to be bad. But to end the season, the final four games for them, like, obviously North Carolina, biggest disappointment in all of college football, I think, for 2021. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a bold statement or not, but
Ty Chandler, Eric Gray, they left the programs, thought they were going to better spots.
That's
guess what?
Interesting call right there.
They all did the wrong thing there. You hate to see it. Spencer Rattler, come on down to Knoxville next year, 2022.
Spencer Rattler is hitting the transfer portal for sure. But Wake Forest's final four games of the season at North Carolina, NC State at home, at Clemson, at Boston College.
Yeah, they're not running the table.
Absolute 0% chance they're going undefeated. Like if they go 10-2, I'll be impressed, honestly, because they're going to drop some of those games. Like, I think they might drop four in a row in the year, but I would bet a lot that they're going to drop those last three, NC State and at Clemson and at Boston College.
Need that Riley Skinner look. Wyoming and Air Force. The only thing I have on this, 5-1 Falcons. We both picked this one, I think. Or did you pick Wyoming?
No, we both picked Air Force.
Okay. Wyoming obviously came into this game undefeated, but 64 carries for that triple option over there by Troy Calhoun's bunch for 211 yards. Wyoming, 114 yards in the ground, 27 carries, pair of fumbles. Yeah, Wyoming loses that one. Air Force, 5-1. Suddenly, the cream of the crop of the armed forces right there with Army. Head to head, I like it. I like it. Navy, 1-4.
I feel like Air Force has always been the best of the armed forces.
No,
right?
They have not always been the best. They've been the most consistent, though.
The most consistent for sure.
Navy's been the best.
Like wins and losses wise, that's probably true because you have the Paul Johnson run there, and you got.
I mean, up until this year, the last 2 years basically, Navy has been great. Like they've been great, and it's just fallen off for whatever reason the last couple of years. But we'll
see.
Are you
contractually obligated to run the wishbone if you're one of the armed forces? Is that is Air Force still doing that?
Yeah, Air Force is running the triple option. They ran it. Yeah, they're
like, Troy
Calhoun.
Have to? Is it just the personnel you get? Like, this is the only option you can. This is the only offense you can run. Like,
well, you could. I guess you can do two choices.
In the job interview, it's like, so what offense are you gonna run? Well, I thought I'd spread it out and get out of my offense. You don't understand how we do things.
I don't know. I mean, Georgia Southern was almost like that, and now Georgia Southern's branching out. They haven't run the traditional triple option in a decade now.
I feel like I'm blanking on his name, Jamie Chadwell.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's the modern triple.
Yeah, because it's like a weird blend.
Some sort of passing element, like
Grayson McCall.
Spread them out. Yeah, it's got to be something like that. Like you're just having your quarterback take these hits between the tackles, like over and over. It's just, I don't feel like that's a winning formula in the 21st century, but. Who knows? It works for the armed forces, so.
Yeah, and I'll talk to Jamie on Tuesday. No love for Coastal in the college football playoff.
Big time get.
Hey, we're starting something here. We're starting something here.
Friend of the pod.
I'm going to ask for a helmet. I want, green turf. I want him to send me some stuff. I want them to send me some cool Coastal Chanticleer swag. I'd rock it. Shout out to Conway, South Carolina, and the good folks over there. Notre Dame, Virginia Tech. Notre Dame survives another one. Just an amazing season for them from the quarterback room. Like the musical chairs in Notre Dame territory is just, it's just bonkers. But did you see the fans really upset with Fuente after this one and Virginia Tech?
So yeah, when you're talking about the fourth down, you're talking about at the very end.
Yes.
On like what? They were on like the 27?
Yes.
Their own 27?
Fourth and one from its own 27.
Like that would have been the most asinine going forward, and unless you're like this guy, unless you're like a Lane Kiffin and you've been like vocal about that's what we do, go for it on fourth down or whatever. Like that's such a low percentage play. Like it's a 29-29 game. It's not like Notre Dame. Like I think they'd started to kind of get something going at that point. It felt like they had momentum in the game, but
I think they just scored in their previous drive.
Yeah, but it's you've gotten plenty of stops. It's not like you just, if we get it back to them, last team who has the ball is going to win, you know? Like, there was, 2 minutes left, a minute 50 or so left when that happened? Like, that's ridiculous coach second-guessing to me. Like, in a tie game, you don't go for it on fourth and one on your own 27-yard line. Like that's how you lose a game.
Utah, USC. Utah gets their first win against USC at USC in 100 years, sir. We talked about it on the pre-show. USC gets stomped at home. Cam Rising comes in there, 22 of 28, completed 79% of his passes, 306 yards, 3 TDs. There was a flea flicker in this one to Valet to put the Utes up 21-10 early in this game. Just great. The Utes were rolling. This was the best game they've played all season. Obviously, an extremely emotional week with Aaron Lowe's passing, who was actually wearing Ty Jordan's number this season, who passed away this off season. Just unreal. And Whittingham came out and said that no one will be wearing that number ever again. But just a brutal, wow, brutal, emotionally draining year for these Utes, and for them to come out and still just whip up on USC and take care of business. Just remarkable stuff. So great, great stuff for the Utes. And yeah, USC, you don't have to worry about keeping your interim and that he's going to win too many games. I think they're going to hire outside.
That is no longer an issue for sure.
Other games, Tennessee rolls South Carolina. We talked a lot about that. Hendon Hooker has this offense just rolling. Tennessee, number 14 in S&P Plus at this point in the season. Who had Josh Heupel with the amount of roster turnover, the limitations on the defensive and offensive line, like no linebackers for most of the spring, to be 14th, it's pretty wild. Like Josh Heupel bringing in Leonard Little and Al Wilson got honored at halftime this week. There's just all these reasons for optimism. Felix Jones doing stuff. Jalen Hyatt still, I think I'm out on Jalen Hyatt at this point, but Tian Evans had a scare in this one. He got banged up and didn't return, but Heupel said that was just precautionary. So he'll be back for the Ole Miss game. But yeah, Tian Evans is just an absolute star. Hendon Hooker just knows exactly what he's doing. He found where he needed to go with the football. Tennessee rolls. South Carolina's bad. Like South Carolina is very, very bad. And I think they got a long, long way to go. Ohio State stomps Maryland 66-17. Ohio State
hold on. Don't look now. Tennessee has got some votes. Coaches poll.
I like
they
it.
They got eight points in the coaches poll. So that puts them at about like the 35th ranked team in the country or so. So this 4-game stretch, what's their record after this 4-game stretch? Tennessee, they're what, 4-2 right now?
Yes, the best case scenario is 2-2.
Miss Ole Miss at Alabama, at Kentucky, and then Georgia.
Mm, best case is 2-2.
I think that's
if it's 2-2, you're giving six, Josh Heupel. Six. If it's 3-1, you're giving Josh Heupel a lifetime contract.
Yeah, I mean 6-4, it could end up an 8-4 season. Like that's without a doubt a success year one.
That's a big time home run success year one.
That's requiring a win over Ole Miss or Kentucky, because I think we're both going to assume Georgia and Alabama are losses. So Ole Miss and at Kentucky, that could also be 4 losses.
I don't think they're losing all 4. I don't think so. I think they're splitting. My guess right now is 2-2, but I think it would not, like, I wouldn't argue with you over 1-3. I think 0-4 would be stunning with the way this team's playing. I think 0-4 would be stunning.
It's hard to say, but I mean, they're not going to be favored in any of these, so it's hard to say it's stunning.
Like, we'll see. It's early for Kentucky, because I think if they beat
6.
I mean, Georgia's playing Kentucky, remember, this week. So that's where game day is going to be. And if Georgia boat, like, just steamrolls Kentucky like they did Arkansas, and then Tennessee beats Ole Miss, I think there's a chance that Tennessee's favored in that Kentucky game. We'll see that's what happens there.
Yeah, it'll be... If they beat Ole Miss, they might could jump into the top 25, honestly.
I mean, you have to be a top 25 team at that point.
I think that's probably fair.
BYU's number 10 right now. You get Texas, who was 21 this week. I don't know. I think when you're looking at some of these rankings, I'm like, I don't know.
But
I think
if it's 6-6,
like SMU and San Diego State, like in a neutral site, San Diego State, Tennessee, Brady Hoke versus a group, like who's winning that game? Wake Forest, Tennessee on a neutral site, who's winning that game?
It's fair. But if it does end up 6-6, is that a success for Heupel, or 7-5, is that the minimum? That's like
this. I think 6-6 would mean that the season really went off the rails, and you don't want to go backwards down the stretch. Like that would feel like you're going backwards, and I don't.
It's I feel like that might be what people say after a 4-2 start, mm-hmm. but it's also, you have to look at the details, right? Like, this is the toughest 4-game stretch on the schedule without a doubt. So,
but if you only finish with wins against Vanderbilt and UT Martin at the end of all this, I don't know. Or not UT Martin, South Alabama, UT Martin next year. I don't know. That'd be pretty sad if that's how it ended.
Okay. I'm just trying to gauge the expectations for this 4-game stretch. So
I think this offense is just too good. Like, they're going to catch one of these teams. The offense is just too dominant right now. Like, it's just too dominant, especially in the first quarter. I don't know if you knew how Tennessee was in the first quarter, Matt Green, but
I've never heard. No one's mentioned it.
They're a juggernaut. They're a juggernaut in the first quarter.
I could see them giving Ole Miss a game, and based on how they play, it'll be interesting. I think Kentucky, at Kentucky, we saw how much trouble Florida had at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. But
that'll be interesting. I think we're going to that guy, actually. I think we're doing a road trip. It's not that far. It's only an hour and a half from Knox.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I think we're actually planning to head to Athens for game day this week.
Oh, very cool.
Maybe get tickets, maybe just drive home and watch the game with the house, but
just go to the game, yeah. Man. Get some tickets.
Might do that, but shit's expensive, man.
How much are they going
especially
for?
College game day. I was looking, especially these fees, man. Like, I'm such an old person, honestly, stuff. Like, I was looking for at Kentucky tickets last week, actually. Mm-hmm. And it was like $140 for like not the highest section, not the nosebleeds, but like not low, right? Mm. Like the 300s or something, I think. And it's like $140 plus $50 in fees for each ticket. It's like, what kind of garbage is this? This is a $200 ticket. So I couldn't justify the fees, honestly. But now these tickets are, I think it's like $250 for like the 600 level, like the nosebleeds at this point with game day and everything. It's kind of crazy how Georgia schedules shaken out. We kind of all talked about how weak it was, especially the home schedule, and now you got game day coming here for the second time this in like 3 weeks.
I mean, you got to give Mark Stoops a statue for getting Kentucky on game day for Georgia and making Kentucky Georgia just like a primetime must see,
without a doubt, for the second time in 4 years.
Yeah,
Georgia Kentucky is basically to decide the East, so yeah, just don't build the statue while he's alive and coaching, because Gary Patterson's statue is just like, it's just weird.
Yes.
And now it's like, they're not really that good anymore. There was like such a strong tradition there for like several years, and now they're not that good anymore, and he's just still there. It's just like, well, we can't fire him. He's got a statue. You can't just fire a guy with a statue. I think that's legal, a legal obligation. I don't know how that works.
Well, TCU did blow out Texas Tech this weekend, 52-31. We had an upset. Oregon State goes down on the road at Washington State. Mizzou struggles with North Texas a little bit, 48-35. We had Illinois get blanked by Wisconsin, so Wisconsin gets... True or false? Graham Mertz passed for over 100 yards in this game against Illinois.
Well, since you're asking the question, I'm going to say false.
No, he did. Exactly 100 yards.
Oh, wow.
Exactly 100.
That's good stuff. And going back to what you said with Missouri, I think that might be the team I've been like the most wrong about in the East this year.
They're bad.
Or in SEC. Like, I was kind of expecting, you know, maybe them to do more what Tennessee's doing and kind of be that third, fourth best team in the East. Like, they're looking like... They're down in the Vanderbilt and South Carolina club right now. Like, they're not looking too hot. I don't know if anyone's down in that club. I don't know if anyone's in the same club with Vanderbilt. They're in a league of their own. But Missouri is not looking like more than like a 6-7 win team, I think, at most.
Georgia Tech 31, Duke 27, Virginia 34, Louisville 33. Brandon Armstrong threw for almost 500 yards in this. Cardinal defense still not good. The Cardinal defense, the upset that we haven't talked about, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this. Florida State 35, UNC 25.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this at all, right? Like, how about Mac Brown's post game comments?
What did he say? No, I didn't see it,
dude. Mac Brown basically said, like, this isn't our team's fault, like, this is the media, like, picking the wrong team, essentially. Like, this is all you guys who thought we were going to be good this year, and you were dead wrong. We're not good
at all. What if he was just, like, he was telling people all summer, he's like, we're going to suck. Like, I don't know why the media is like, we're going to be awful. We're going to lose to Florida State at home.
Every time you turn on College Football Live, you just, like, turn the TV off. Like, why do people think we're going to be so good this year? What the hell is happening? We lost our two best running backs, our two best receivers. Like, I don't know what we're going to do. Oh, man. Sam Howell still is good. Like, I'm not just saying Sam Howell's not a good quarterback anymore. He had 100 yards rushing in this game. I think he still looks like a first-round pick. Like,
do you think he comes back?
He could. I just feel like I think you should leave because of this quarterback class. Like, who's the best quarterback?
That's
who's
true.
Number one quarterback getting drafted this year? Like, I think Sam Howell having an underwhelming year. Like, pro scouts look.
People thought it was gonna be Rattler, and there's no chance.
No chance. It's like people would have taken DJ Uiagalelei like before he was even eligible to draft. You know what I mean? Like,
it might be Malik Willis, honestly.
Yeah, it honestly could be. So, like, I think pro scouts look at tools, you know, and like Sam Howell is like, he's a good athlete too, on top of being a really good passer, like having a strong arm and everything. Like, might not have like maybe the strongest like NFL arm or something, but he's definitely a good quarterback. So I feel like if you know how NFL teams talk themselves into quarterbacks all the time, like, it feels like it's impossible for anyone to still need a quarterback, because every year, like, five of them go in the first round, right? At some point, everyone has to have their franchise quarterback, but it's like just someone always needs one. So these guys that are, you know, maybe the 20th or 30th best player in the draft, they're the first or second or third ranked quarterback, and teams get convinced to draft him top five or top 10. So I think Sam Howell still got the skill, and so I think you got to go just because of this class.
I don't hate
but
it.
I don't know what to make of them losing to Florida State. Like, is Florida State righting the ship? Is Mike Norvell getting things together, or is this an indictment on North Carolina?
I think it's an indictment on North Carolina.
It could be a little bit of both, but probably more North Carolina.
All right. Well, are you ready to do our last segment? The sticker segment. Add a sticker, remove a sticker. I got my stickers. Do you?
Oh, yeah. Let's add the stickers.
Stickers for me. Velus Jones really showed out in that Tennessee-South Carolina game. Velus Jones is a full-on toolsy weapon now. It's out. Velus Jones returning kicks in the screen game. That dude is just a menace. And, it's been great seeing him get involved. I've been yelling about getting him more targets for weeks. Cade McNamara did what he needed to do. J.J. McCarthy, the five-star, sitting there. Everyone's excited. But you know what? He goes out, wins in the rib. Tough game. Gets Nebraska. Florida State as a whole gets a sticker. Big win. Season from hell. We just talked about him. You know, that's a big thing for me. And then Zach Calzada. I mean, just the game of his life. Lanier legend, Zach Calzada. So, shout out to him. Who are your stickers, sir?
I got to give a sticker to Caleb Williams for just coming in the Red River shootout.
Yes.
And just absolutely balling out. I thought it was interesting early because, like, he was playing early, like, while Rattler was still playing, right? And when he broke that long touchdown run, it felt like Rattler was nowhere to be found, right? Mm. Like, I don't know what the dynamics are there. You know, we all have our opinions about Spencer Rattler or whatever, the videos that we've seen online and things like that. But I feel like in that situation, a quarterback is usually like artificially excited for his backup. You know, it's like, hell yeah, man, I'm the quarterback. I'm going to show that I'm a supportive teammate. I don't care that someone's about to take my job. You know, it's like, that's usually just the performance guys put on. So, but yeah, Caleb Williams straight took Spencer Rattler's job this week. He wasn't happy about it. So I gotta give him a helmet sticker for that one.
I like it.
And then
it.
My other one. Yeah. You had my other one too. Zach Calzada. I've been pretty hard on the Sugar Hill native. And, this is by far the best game I've seen him play. And like you said, those quarterbacks that have beaten Nick Saban Alabama teams, he might not be remembered like Johnny Manziel and Deshaun Watson and Joe Burrow, but he's in that class of Steven Garcia. No one can ever take that away from him.
Absolutely. Last one, our removing of stickers portion. Ripping the sticker off, Matt Green. Sam Pittman for going for it, not keeping that game going. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. Just keep going.
I thought you of all people, man. I thought you would respect that. Taking Sam Pittman's helmet sticker for this.
I am, because I think you're right there. I think it's different when it's Alabama. Like, when you're or Georgia. Do whatever. Like, Lane Kiffin just going for it. If he went for it on his own 15 against Bama, I get it. But Pittman, it's like you're right there with Ole Miss. Y'all are somewhere even. Like, y'all are in the same ballpark. Keep the thing going. Like, I think it's based on tiers, where it's like, what do you have to lose? Like, Tennessee should never punt against Georgia in a couple weeks. Like, just don't punt. Four down territory from the get-go. Like, let's see what happens. I would not punt. Or I would not go for it in that scenario when it's two even teams.
I think when you have it, like, on the road, like, you guys just think about the scenario. Like, on the road, big time atmosphere and everything. Like, if you can get 3 yards to win the game, like, if you would have said that before the game, we need to get 3 yards to win it. Like, I don't know. I kind of think on the road, that's kind of typically when you go for the win in terms of, you know, go for the tie. I think you also go for the tie when you think you're the better team. And this game keeps going in overtime. Like, they weren't really stopping Ole Miss's offense. You know what I mean? So if this just continues to go back and forth in overtime, like, yeah, you can potentially win this game. Like, they weren't stopping you much either. But with triple zeros on the clock, like, you have a chance to get 3 yards to win it, like, right here, right now. Like, you gotta respect the call, even though it didn't work. And just how quick he was with it. Like, the second they showed him on after the touchdown, like, he was ready with the two. Like, it wasn't even a question. It's just the play when the play looks so bad and so, like, not close to working, it's always easiest to second guess the 2-point conversion decision, right? Because you're just like, yeah, you went for two in the win, but that was the best thing you had to draw up, really? Like, that was it? That was your play?
That's fair. Ed Orgeron, I'm removing a sticker from him. Just a pathetic effort against Kentucky there. That man is getting fired. I sent you the text with the whole radio call controversy. Just insanity down there in Baton Rouge. Just bad. Everything's bad. Garrett Schrader, though, in a losing effort. Shout out to Garrett Schrader. 29 carries, 178 yards, TD. I'm removing a sticker from Syracuse football team, not giving this quarterback a victory. 30 carries for a quarterback? Preposterous. Love it. Garrett Schrader, Captain Neckbeard. I mean, I'm here for it. Who are you removing a sticker from?
Mine might be a little harsh here because, you know, no one was really no one was, like, giving this guy all conference honors anyway, but I got to remove a helmet sticker from Demetrius Robertson.
Oh, no. This
Georgia transfer
personal.
Versus Auburn, or for Auburn against Georgia. Like, we know about this Georgia defense. We know how rowdy they are and everything. But Demetrius Robertson had so many drops in this game. He wasn't the only one. Like, Auburn dropped a lot of passes in general. Like, I think, like, this was Georgia's worst defensive performance you've seen so far, even though they still held him to 10 points. But I think it was only 10 points just because of the number of drops. And you had, like, this game had to be circled for Demetrius Robertson going against your former team. And he had multiple opportunities to make plays, and he just didn't make them. So might be harsh, but I'm taking one from Demetrius Robertson.
All right. Matt Green, that is all I've got. Do you have anything else you would like to mention as we wrap up this week 6 of the college football season?
I just have two things to mention. One, next week is the only week of the entire college football season where we get 7 SEC games, all SEC teams playing each other. So I'm super excited for that next week. And tomorrow I will be, or today when you're listening to this podcast, I will be in I almost said SunTrust. I'll be in Truist Park.
Oh, you're going.
Rooting on the Bravos game 3, man. 1:00. So don't stop the chop, man. The Bravos can clinch this thing at home.
I like it. I'm curious to see what the turnout's going to be for a 1:00 playoff game in Atlanta.
I think they said it was close to a sellout.
I'll believe when I see it.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how quick they arrive, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like, moving over.
When Kirby calls us out personally and says, you have to be in your seat at noon, they answer. But Brian Snicker did no such thing. So the people are going to be at the Battery. You know, they're going to be there. It's going to be a packed house. But at 107 first pitch, we might still be at 60-70% capacity. We'll see.
All right. Matt Green, we can find you on twitter.com at @Matt_W_Green. Follow myself at @Chase_Thomas. If you like listening to Matt and I, guess what? We do this show. New episodes pop up in your feed every Monday morning and every Thursday morning. Recap show on Mondays, previews on Thursdays. So subscribe to this feed on Apple, Spotify, or get your podcast. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com, and email us with any college football questions that you have for either Matt or myself at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Again, ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Follow Zeus and Maddox on Instagram for all the great, wholesome dog content as well down there in Tequila, Georgia. Man.
And just the dog nutritional information that you need in your life.
Absolutely. I think she posted a new one the other day. That's just, was there bananas in there? I don't know.
She gets real excited with breakfast. That's when her presentation is the best, for sure.
So she's a morning person.
It's elite presentation, for sure. Yeah, she's the person, she wakes up. At like she's reading all the time also like on her phone so like reading books novels on her phone. So she's the kind of person who wakes up at like 6 a.m and like sits there till like 7:30 just like reading, and then she gets up and starts her day. I'm just like, I work at 9, I'm waking up at 8:50 and going to brush my teeth and clock in for the day. So I sleep to the last second I can.
Commitment to excellence, the Matt Green story.
Kind of guy I am, you know. I just sleep is important, you know. Gotta get that REM sleep.
The sports renaissance woman's the same way though, like Tori, where just the morning stuff where the roles are reversed, where like I'm always like more hype as the night wears on and pretty social at that point, talkative. But in the morning I just have no inclination to speak. I need several cups of coffee before I like to be talked to in the morning.
I think she's finally accepted me for it.
That's good. It takes time.
That you, if you're walking the dogs in the morning, like I'm just not trying to start my day that way. Like
no.
30-40 minute walk, like before, like just doing the 9 to 5 is just like, that sounds terrible. But like do the 9 to 5 and then at 6 o'clock take the dogs on a walk. Like I'm down with that. So I'm down with the after work walk, but
sounds I do the midday time. Walk to the park because I take Khaleesi the dog to the park at noon. I like when I've gotten a lot of stuff done and I reach a midpoint in my day where I'm like, all right, let me take a break and I'm going to go do that. But like you, I'm right there with you. I can't start my day with something like that or the workout people first thing in the morning. No interest.
Not at all.
No interest. Matt Green, always a pleasure, my friend. I will talk to you in a couple days.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.